ever since she was a child. Why don't you finally come clean with the truth? Tell her who you really are. Let her decide if you're good enough for her. You're heir to a chieftain, if you'd ever go home and claim it. Gibraltar knows exactly who you are, and he summoned you to be one of the contenders for her hand. Obviously, he thinks you're good enough for his daughter. Maybe you're the only one who doesn't.
Maybe he brought me just to make you look good by comparison. You know, invite the beast boy. Isn't that what Gillian used to call me?
He rolled his eyes.
Then the handsome Laird looks even more appealing. She can't be interested in me. As far as Gillian knows, I'm not even titled. I'm a nobody.
And I thought you wanted her, Quinn.
Grim turned back to his horse and swept Occam's side with long, even strokes of the brush.
I do. I'd be proud to make Gillian my wife. Any man would.
Do you love her?
Quinn cocked a brow and eyed him curiously.
Of course I love her.
No, do you really love her? Does she make you crazy inside?
Grim watched him carefully. Quinn blinked.
I don't know what you mean, Grim.
Grim snorted.
Cuh, that didn't expect you would, he muttered.
Oh, hell, this is a snarl of a mess.
Quinn exhaled impatiently and dropped onto his back in the fragrant hay. He plucked a stem of clover from the pile and chewed on it thoughtfully.
I want her. She wants you, and you're my closest friend. The only unknown factor in this equation is what you want.
First of all, I sincerely doubt she wants me, Quinn. If anything, it's the remains of a childish infatuation that, I assure you, I will relieve her of. Secondly, it doesn't matter what I want.
Grim produced an apple from his sporran and offered it to Occam.
What do you mean it doesn't matter? Of course it matters.
Quinn frowned.
What I want is the most irrelevant part of this affair, Quinn. I'm a berserker,
Grim said flatly.
So? Look what it has brought you. Most men would trade their souls to be a berserker.
That would be a damned foolish bargain. And there's a lot you do not know that is part and parcel of the curse.
It's proved quite a boon for you. You're virtually invincible.
Why, I remember down at Killarney. I do not wish to talk about Killarney.
You killed half the damned...
Hold your wisht!
Grim's head whipped around.
I do not wish to talk about killing. It seems that's the only thing I'm good for. For all that I'm this ridiculous legend of control, there's still a part of me I can't control, Demon Creef. I have no control over the rage. I never have,
he admitted roughly.
When it happens, I lose memory. I lose time. I have no idea what I'm doing when I'm doing it, and when it's over, I have to be told what I've done. You know that. You've had to tell me a time or two.
What are you saying, Grim?
That you must wed her, no matter what I might feel, because I can never be anything to Gillian St. Clair. I knew it then, and I know it now. I will never marry. Nothing has changed. I haven't been able to change.
You do feel for her.
Quinn sat up on the hay mound, searching Grim's face intently.
Deeply. And that's why you tried to make her hate you.
Grim turned back to his horse.
I never told you how my mother died, did I, de Moncrief?
Quinn rose and dusted hay from his kilt.
I thought she was killed in the massacre at Tuluth.
Grim leaned his head against Occam's velvety cheek and breathed deeply of the soothing scent of horse and leather.
No. Jolyn MacIlliac died much earlier that morning, before the MacCain even arrived.
He delivered the words in a cool monotone.
My da murdered her in a fit of rage. Not only did I sink to such foolishness as summoning a berserker that day, I suffer an inherited madness.
I don't believe that, Grim,
Quinn said flatly.
You're one of the most logical, rational men I know.
Grim made a gesture of impatience.
Da told me so himself the night I left Tuluth. Even if I gave myself latitude, even if I managed to convince myself I didn't suffer an inherited weakness of mind, I'm still a berserker.
Don't you realize, Quinn, that according to ancient law, we pagan worshippers of Odin
are to be banished, ostracized, outcast, and murdered if at all possible. Half the country knows berserkers exist and seek to employ us. The other half refuses to admit we do while they attempt to destroy us. Gibraltar must have been out of his mind when he summoned me. He couldn't possibly seriously consider me for his daughter's hand. Even if I wanted with all my heart to take Gillian to wife, what could I offer her? A life such as this? That's assuming I'm not addled by birthright to boot.
You're not addled. I don't know how you got the ridiculous idea that because your da killed your mother, there's something wrong with you. And no one knows who you really are except for me, Gibraltar, and Elizabeth,
Quinn protested.
And Hatchard,
Grimm reminded. And Hawk. And Adrian, he recalled.
So? Four of us know. None of us would ever betray you. As far as the world is concerned, you're Grimm Roderick, the king's legendary bodyguard. All that aside, I don't see how it would be a problem for you to admit who you really are. A lot of things have changed since the massacre at Duluth. And although some people do still fear berserkers, the majority revere them. You're some of the mightiest warriors Alba has ever produced, and you know how we Scots worship our legends. The Circle Elders say only the purest, most honorable blood in Scotland can actually call the berserker.
The McCains still hunt us,
Grimm said through his teeth.
The McCain have always hunted any man they suspected was berserk. They're jealous. They spend every waking moment training to be warriors and can never match up to a berserker. So defeat them and lay it to rest. You're not 14 anymore. I've seen you in action. Rouse up an army. Hell, I'd fight for you. I know scores of men who would. Go home and claim your birthright.
My gift of inherited madness.
The chieftainship, you idiot!
There might be a small problem with that, Grimm said bitterly. My crazy, murdering daw has the dreadful manners to still be lingering on this earth.
What?
Quinn was speechless. He shook his head several times and grimaced.
Christ! How can I walk around all these years thinking I know you, only to find out I don't know a blethering thing about you? You told me your da was dead.
It seemed all his close friends were saying the same thing lately, and he wasn't a man given to lying.
I thought he was, for a long time.
Grimm ran an impatient hand through his hair.
I will never go home, Quinn, and there are some things about being berserk that you do not understand. I can't have any degree of intimacy with a woman without her realizing that I'm not normal.
So what am I supposed to do?
Tell the lucky woman I am one of those savage-killing beasts that have gotten such a bad reputation over the centuries? Tell her I can't see blood without losing control of myself? Tell her that if my eyes ever start to seem like they're getting incandescent, to run as far away from me as she can because berserkers have been known to turn on friend and foe indiscriminately?
You've never once turned on me, Quinn snapped, and I've been beside you when it happened many times.
Grimm shook his head.
Marry her, Quinn. For Christ's sake, marry her and free me.
He cursed harshly, dropping his head against his stallion.
Do you really think it will?
Quinn asked angrily.
Will it free any of us, Grimm?
Gillian strolled the wall walk, the dim passage behind the parapet, breathing deeply of the twilight. Gloaming was her favorite hour, the time when dusk blurred into absolute darkness, broken only by a silvery moon and cool white stars above Caithness. She paused, resting her arms against the parapet. The scent of roses and honeysuckle carried on the breeze. She inhaled deeply. Another scent teased her senses, and she cocked her head. Dark and spicy, leather and soap and man. Grimm. She turned slowly, and he was there, standing behind her on the roof, deep in the shadows of the abutting walls, watching her, his gaze unfathomable. She hadn't heard a sound as he'd approached, not a whisper of cloth, not one scuffle of his boots on the stones. It was as if he were fashioned of night air and had sailed the wind to her solitary perch.
Will you marry?
He asked without preface. Gillian sucked in a breath. Shadows couched his features, but for a bar of moonlight illuminating his intense eyes. How long had he been there? Was there a me unspoken at the end of his sentence?
What are you asking?
She said breathlessly. His smooth voice was bland. Quinn would make a fine husband for you.
Quinn?
She echoed. Aye. He's golden as you, lass. He's kind, gentle, and wealthy. His family would cherish you.
And what about yours?
She couldn't believe she dared ask. What about mine what?
Would your family cherish me?
She thought. But she said,
What is your family like?
His gaze was icy. I have no family.
None?
Gillian frowned. Surely he had some relatives somewhere. You know nothing about me, lass, he reminded her in a low voice.
Well, since you keep butting your nose into my life, I think I have the right to ask a few questions.
Gillian peered intently at him, but it was too dark to see him clearly. How could he seem such a part of the night? I'll quit butting my nose, and the only time I butt my nose in is when it looks like you're about to get in trouble.
I do not get into trouble all the time, Grim.
So?
He gestured impatiently. When will you marry him?
Who?
She seethed, plucking at the folds of her gown. Clouds passed over the moon, momentarily obscuring him from her view. His eerily disembodied voice was mildly reproaching. Try to follow the conversation, lass. Quinn.
By Odin's shaft!
Spear!
He corrected with a hint of amusement in his voice.
I am not marrying Quinn!
She informed the dark corner furiously.
Certainly not Ramsay.
His voice deepened dangerously.
Or was he such a good kisser that he's already persuaded you?
Gillian drew a deep breath. She released it and closed her eyes, praying for temperance.
Lass, you have to wed one of them. Your daughter demands it,
he said quietly. She opened her eyes. Praise the saints, the clouds had blown by and she could once again discern the outline of his form. There was a flesh-and-blood man in those shadows, not some mythical beast.
You're one of the men Mada brought here for me. So I guess that means I could choose you, doesn't it?
He shook his head, a blur of movement in the gloom.
Never do that, Gillian. I have nothing to offer you but a lifetime of hell.
Maybe you think that, but maybe you're wrong. Maybe if you quit feeling sorry for yourself, you'd see things differently.
I don't feel sorry for myself.
Ha! You're drowning in it, Roderick. Only occasionally does a smile manage to steal over your handsome face, and as soon as you catch it, you swallow it. You know what your problem is?
No, but I have the feeling you're going to tell me, Peahen.
Clever, Roderick. That's supposed to make me feel stupid enough to shut up. Well, it won't work, because I feel stupid around you all the time anyway, so I may as well act stupid too. I suspect your problem is that you're afraid.
Grim leaned indolently back against the stones of the wall, looking every inch a man who'd never contemplated the word fear long enough for it to gain entrance into his vocabulary.
Do you know what you're afraid of?
She pushed bravely on.
Considering that I didn't know I was afraid, I'm afraid you've got me at a bit of a disadvantage, he mocked.
You're afraid. You might have a feeling,
she announced triumphantly.
Oh, I'm not afraid of feelings, lass,
he said, dark, sensual knowledge dripping from his voice.
It just depends on the kind of feeling.
Gillian shivered.
Don't try to change the subject.
And if the feeling's below my waist,
by segueing into a discussion about your debauched,
then I'm perfectly comfortable with it.
And perverse male needs.
Perverse male needs, he echoed,
suppressed laughter lacing his words. Gillian bit her lip. She always ended up saying too much around him because he had the bad habit of talking over her, and she lost her head time and again.
The issue at hand is feelings, as in emotions,
she reminded stiffly.
And you think they're mutually exclusive?
Grim prodded.
Had she said that,
she wondered. By the saints, the man turned her brain into mush.
What are you talking about?
Feelings and feelings, Jillian. Do you think they're mutually exclusive?
Jillian pondered his question for a few moments.
I haven't had a lot of experience in that area, but I would guess they are more often for a man than a woman,
she replied at length.
Not all men, Jillian.
He paused, then added smoothly,
Exactly how much experience have you had?
What was my point?
She asked irritably, refusing to acknowledge his question. He laughed. By the saints, he laughed. It was a genuine, uninhibited laugh, deeply resonant, rich, and warm. She shuddered, because the flash of white teeth in his shadowed face made him so handsome she wanted to cry at the unfairness of his miserly dispensation of such beauty.
I was hoping you'd tell me that any time now, Jillian.
Roderick, conversations with you never go where I think they're going.
At least you're never bored. That must count for something.
Jillian blew out a frustrated breath. That was true. She was elated, exhilarated, sensually awakened, but never, never bored.
So, are they mutually exclusive for you?
She dared.
What?
He asked blandly.
Feelings and feelings.
Grimm tugged restlessly at his dark hair.
I suppose I haven't met the woman who could make me feel while I was feeling her.
I could. I know I could,
she almost shouted.
But you have those other kinds of feelings quite frequently, don't you?
She snipped.
As often as I can.
There you go with your hair again. What is it with you and your hair?
When he didn't reply, she said childishly,
I hate you, Roderick.
She could have kicked herself the moment she said it. She prided herself on being an intelligent woman, yet around Grimm she regressed into a petty child. She was going to have to dredge up something more effective than the same puerile response if she intended to spar with him.
No, you do not, lass.
He uttered a harsh curse and stepped forward, doffing the shadows impatiently.
That's the third time you've said that to me, and I'm getting bloody sick of hearing it.
Jillian held her breath as he moved closer, staring down at her with a strained expression.
You wish you could hate me, Jillian St. Clair, and Christ knows you should hate me. But you just can't quite bring yourself to hate me all that much, can you? I know, because I've looked in your eyes, Jillian, and where a great big nothing should be if you hated me, there's a fiery thing with curious eyes.
He turned in a swirl of shadows and descended from the roof, moving with lupine grace. At the bottom of the stairs, he paused in a puddle of moonlight and tilted his head back. The pale moon cast his bitter expression into stark relief.
Dunna ever say those words to me again, Jillian. I mean it. Fair warning. Not ever.
Cobblestones crunched beneath his boots as he disappeared into the gardens, comforting her that he was, indeed, of this world. She pondered his words for a long time after he'd gone, and she was left alone with the bruised sky on the parapet. 3 times he'd called her by name, not Brat or Lass, but Jillian. And although his final words had been delivered in a cool monotone, she had seen, unless the moon was playing tricks with her vision, a hint of anguish in his eyes. The longer she considered it, the more convinced she became. Logic insisted that love and hate could masquerade behind the same facade. It became an issue of simply peeling back that mask to peer beneath it and determine which emotion truly drove the man in the shadow. A glimmer of understanding pierced the gloom that surrounded her.
Go with your heart,
her mother had counseled her hundreds of times.
The heart speaks clearly, even when the mind insists otherwise. Mama, I miss you,
Jillian whispered as the last stain of purple twilight melted into a raven horizon. But despite the distance, Elizabeth St. Clair's strength was inside her, in her blood. She was a Sacheron and a St. Clair, a formidable combination. indifferent to her, was he? It was time to see about that. Chapter 10.
Well, that's it then. They're off,
Hatcher muttered, watching the men depart. He finger-combed his short red beard thoughtfully. He stood with Kaylee on the front steps of Caithness, watching three horses fade into swirls of dust down the winding road.
Why did they have to choose Dirkesh? Kaylee asked irritably. If they wanted to go catting about, they could very well have gone to the village right here.
She waved at the small town clustered protectively near the walls of Caithness that spilled into the valley beyond. Hatchard shot her a caustic glance.
Although this may come as a grave shock to your, shall we say, accommodating nature, not everyone thinks about catting all the time, Mrs. Twillow.
Don't be Mrs. Twillowing me, Remy, she snapped. I'll not be believing you've lived nearly 40 years without doing a bit of catting yourself, but as I say, I find it appalling that they're off catting when they were brought here for Jillian.
If you'd listen for a change, Kaylee, you might hear what I've been telling you. They went to Dirkesh because Ramsay suggested they go, not for catting, but to acquire wares that can only be purchased in the city. You told me we've run short of peppercorns and cinnamon, and you won't be finding those wares here.
He gestured to the village and allowed a significant pause to pass before adding,
I also heard one might find saffron at the city fair this year.
Saffron! Bless the saints, we haven't had saffron since last spring.
You've kept me perennially aware of that fact, Hatchard said wryly.
One does what one can to aid an old man's memory,
Kaylee sniffed.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you usually send your men for the wares?
Seeing how Quinn was so avid to buy an elegant gift for Jillian, I certainly wasn't about to stop him. Grimm, I believe, went with them simply to avoid getting stuck alone with the lass,
Hatchard added dryly. Kaylee's eyes sparkled, and she clapped her hands together.
A gift for Jillian! So it's to be Jillian de Moncrief, is it? A fine name for a fine lass, I must say, and that would keep her nearby in the lowlands.
Hatchard returned his pensive gaze to the ribbon of road wending through the valley. He watched the last rider disappear around a bend and clucked his tongue.
I wouldn't be so certain, Kaylee, he murmured.
Whatever is that cryptic remark supposed to mean?
Kaylee frowned.
Just that in my estimation the lass has never had eyes for anyone but Grimm.
Grimm Roderick is the worst possible man for her,
Kaylee exclaimed. Hatchard turned a curious gaze on the voluptuous maid.
Now why would you say that?
Kaylee's hand flew to her throat, and she fanned herself.
There are men women desire, and there are men women marry. Roderick is not the kind of man a woman marries.
Why not?
Hatchard asked, bewildered.
He's dangerous,
Kaylee breathed.
Positively dangerous to the lass.
You think he might harm her in some way?
Hatchard tensed, prepared to do battle if such was the case.
Without even meaning to, Remy,
Kaylee sighed.
They've gone where? And for how long, did you say?
Jillian's brow puckered with indignation.
To the city of Dirkesh, m'lady, Hatchard replied. I suppose they'll be gone just shy of a senate.
Jillian smoothed the folds of her gown irritably.
I wore a dress this morning, Kaylee, a pretty one, she complained. I was even going to ride to the village wearing it instead of Da's plaid. And you know how I hate riding in a dress. You look lovely indeed,
Kaylee assured her.
I look lovely for whom? All my suitors have abandoned me.
Hatchard cleared his throat gruffly.
There wouldn't have been one in particular you were hoping to impress, would there?
Jillian turned on him accusingly.
Did my da put you up to spying on me, Hatchard? You're probably sending him weekly reports. Well, boodle, I'll tell you nothing.
Hatchard had the grace to look abashed.
I'm not sending him reports. I was merely concerned for your welfare.
You can concern yourself with someone else's. I'm old enough to worry enough for both of us. Jillian,
Kaylee chided.
Crabby does not become you. Hatchard is merely expressing his concern. I feel like being crabby, Can't I just do that for a change?
Jillian's brow furrowed as she reflected a moment.
Wait a minute, she said pensively. Durkesh, is it? They hold a splendid fair this time of year. The last time I went with Mama and Da, we stayed at a perfectly lovely little inn. The Black Boot, wasn't it, Kaylee?
Kaylee nodded.
When your brother Edmund was alive, the two of you went to the city often.
A shadow flitted across Jillian's face. Kaylee winced.
I'm sorry, Jillian. I didn't mean to bring that up. I know.
Jillian drew a deep breath.
Kaylee, start packing. I've a sudden urge to go a-faring, and what better time than now? Hatchard, have the horses ready. I'm tired of sitting around letting life happen to me. It's time I make my life happen.
This doesn't bode well, Mrs. Twillow,
Hatchard told Kaylee as Jillian strolled briskly off.
A woman has as much right to cat about as a man. At least she's catting after a husband. Now we just have to put our heads together and make certain she chooses the right one.
Kaylee informed him loftily before sauntering after Jillian, twitching her plump hips in a manner that put Hatchard in mind of a long-forgotten, exceedingly bawdy ditty. He blew out a gusty breath and headed off to the stables. The Black Boot sagged alarmingly at the eaves, but fortunately, the rooms Grimm had procured were on the third floor, not the top, which meant they should be reasonably safe from the deluge that had begun halfway through their trip. Pausing outside the open door to the inn, Grimm fisted double handfuls of his shirt and squeezed it. Water gushed from between his hands and splattered loudly on the great stone slab outside the door. A thick, swirling mist was settling over the town. Within a quarter hour, the dense fog would be impossible to navigate through. They'd arrived just in time to avoid the worst of it. Grimm had settled his horse in the small, U-shaped courtyard behind the inn, where a ratty lean-to swayed precariously from the drooping roof. Occam would find sufficient shelter, provided the flood didn't carry him off. Grimm whisked the beaded water droplets off his plaid before entering the inn. Any weaver worth her salt wove the fabric so tightly it was virtually water-repellent, and the weavers at Dalkeith were some of the finest. He unfastened a length of the woolen fabric and draped it across his shoulder. Quinn and Ramsay were already at the fire, toasting their hands and drying their boots.
"Bloody nasty weather out there, ain't it, lads?"
The barkeep beckoned cheerfully through the doorway to the adjoining tavern.
"Me, I've got a fire in here, warms that one, and a fine brew to chase your chill, so dinna tarry. My name's Mac," he added with a friendly nod. "Come, bide a wee."
Grimm glanced at Quinn, who shrugged. His expression plainly said there wasn't much else to do on such a miserably wet evening than pass it drinking. The three men ducked through the low doorway that partitioned the eatery from the tavern proper and claimed several battered wooden stools at a table by the hearth.
"Seeing as it's nearly deserted in here, I may as well pull up a seat once I've seen to your drinks. Not many venture out in a downpour such as this."
The barkeep ambled unevenly to the bar, then lumbered back to their table, producing a bottle of whiskey and four mugs with a flourish.
"'Tis a fardlin' mess out there, ain't it? And where be you travelin'?"
he asked, sitting heavily.
"Dinna mind my leg. I think the wood's going soft,"
he added as he grabbed a second stool, lifted his wooden leg by the ankle, and dropped it on the slats.
"Sometimes it pains me when the weather goes damp, and in this damn country that's all the time, ain't it? Gloomy place she is, but I love her. You ever been outside of Alba, lads?"
Grimm glanced at Quinn, who was gazing raptly at the barkeep, his expression a mixture of amusement and irritation. Grimm knew they were both wondering if the lonely little barkeep would ever shut up. It was going to be a long night. A few hours later, the rain hadn't abated, and Grimm used the excuse of checking on Occam to escape the smoky tavern and Mac's incessant prattle. Besieged by the same restlessness that had ridden him at Dalkeith, he could scarcely sit still for longer than a few hours. He slipped into the back courtyard of the inn, wondering what Jillian was doing at the moment. A slight smile curved his lips as he pictured her stomping about, tossing her glorious mane of hair, outraged that she'd been left behind. Jillian despised being excluded from anything the lads did, but this was for the best, and she would realize it when Quinn returned with his gift and made his formal pledge. Grimm could scarcely look at Quinn without being struck by what a perfect couple they would make, giving birth to perfect golden children with aristocratic features and not a touch of inherited madness. Perhaps by getting the two of them together he could redeem himself in some small measure, he mused, although the thought of Jillian with Quinn caused his stomach to tighten painfully.
"Get out of me kitchen and dinna be returning, you ratty-ass whelp!"
A door on the far side of the courtyard suddenly burst open. A child tumbled head over heels into the night and landed prone in the mud. Grimm studied the man whose wide frame nearly filled the doorway. He was a big, beefy man, well over 6 feet tall, with a frizzled crown of short-cropped brown curls. His face was mottled red in patches, either due to rage or exertion, or more likely, both, Grimm decided. He clutched a wide butcher's knife that gleamed dully in the light. The lad clambered to his knees, slipping on the sodden ground. He scrubbed at a spattering of mud on his cheek with thin, dirty fingers.
"But Banyan always gives us the scraps. Please, sir, we need to eat."
"I'm not Banyan, you insolent whelp. Banyan doesna work here anymore, and no wonder if he be given away to such as ye. I'm the meat butcher now."
The man cuffed the child with such vigor that the boy collapsed onto his backside in the mud, shaking his head dazedly.
"You think we spare any cuts for the likes of ye? You can rot in the gutter, Robbie McCauley says. I dinna expect anyone to feed me. It's the likes of ye rats that grow up to be thieves and murderers of honest, hard-working men."
The meat butcher stepped out into the rain, dragged the child from the mud by his scruffy collar, and shook him. When the lad began howling, the butcher cracked a meaty hand across his face.
"Release him,"
Grimm said quietly.
"Gah!"
The man glanced around, startled. A sneer crossed his red face as his gaze lit on Grimm, who was partially concealed by the shadows. The meat butcher straightened menacingly, suspending the boy by one hand.
"What's your concern with me business? Stay out of it! I dinna ask your opinion, and I dinna want it. I found the little whelp stealing my victuals."
"Nay, I dinna steal. Banyan gives us the scraps."
The meat butcher backhanded the lad across the face, and blood sprayed from the child's nose. In the shadow of the lean-to, Grimm stared transfixed at the bleeding child. Memories began to crowd him. The flash of a silver blade, a tumble of blonde curls and a blood-stained smock, pillars of smoke. An unnatural wind began to rise, and he felt his body twisting inside, reshaping itself until he was hopelessly lost to the rage within. Far beyond conscious thought, Grimm lunged for the meat butcher, crushing him against the stone wall.
"You son of a bitch!"
Grimm closed his hands around the man's windpipe.
"The child needs food. When I release you, you're going to go in the kitchen and pack him a basket of the finest meat you've got, and then you're going to..." "Like hell I am!"
the butcher managed to wheeze. He twisted in Grimm's grip and plunged blindly forward with the knife. As the blade slid home, Grimm's hand relaxed infinitesimally, and the butcher sucked in a whistling breath of air.
"There, you bastard!" he cried hoarsely. "Nobody messes with Robbie McCauley. I'll be teaching you."
He shoved Grimm with both hands, twisting the knife as he pushed. As Grimm swayed back, the butcher started forward, only to fall instinctively backward again, his eyes widening incredulously, for the madman he'd stabbed with a brutality and efficiency that should have caused a mortal wound was smiling.
"Smile. That's it. Go on, smile as you be dying,"
he cried.
"'Cause dying ye are, and that's for sure."
Grimm's smile contained such sinister promise that the meat butcher flattened himself up against the wall of the inn like lichen seeking a deep, shady crevice between the stones.
"There's a knife in your belly, man,"
the meat butcher hissed, eyeing the protruding hilt of the knife to reassure himself it was, indeed, lodged in his assailant's gut. Breathing evenly, Grimm grasped the hilt with one hand and removed the blade, calmly placing it beneath the butcher's quivering jowls.
"You're going to get the lad the food he came for. Then you will apologize.
Grim said mildly, his eyes glittering.
"To hell with ye,"
the butcher sputtered.
"Any minute now, you'll be falling on your face."
Grim leveled the blade below the butcher's ear, flush across his jugular.
"Don't count on it."
"You should be dead, man. There's a hole in your belly."
"Grim!"
Quinn's voice cut through the night air. Pressing gently, with the care of a lover, Grim pierced the skin on the butcher's neck.
"Grim!"
Quinn repeated softly.
"God, man, get him off of me!"
the butcher cried frantically.
"He's deranged! His bleeding eyes are like..."
"Shut up, you imbecile!" Quinn said in a modulated, conciliatory tone. He knew from experience that harshly uttered words could escalate the state of Berserker Gang. Quinn circled the pair cautiously. Grim had frozen with the blade locked to the man's throat. The ragged lad huddled at their feet, gazing up with wide eyes.
"He be berserk,"
the lad whispered reverently.
"By Odin, look at his eyes."
"He be crazed,"
the butcher whimpered, looking at Quinn.
"Do something."
"I am doing something," Quinn said quietly.
"Make no loud noises, and for Christ's sake, don't move."
Quinn stepped closer to Grim, making certain his friend could see him.
"The whelp's just a homeless ne'er-do-well. 'Tis not the thing to be killing an honest man for,"
the butcher whined.
"How was I supposed to know he was a furling berserker?"
"It shouldn't have made any difference whether he was or not. A man shouldn't behave honorably only when there's someone bigger and tougher around to force him,"
Quinn said, disgusted.
"Grim, do you want to kill this man or feed this boy?"
Quinn spoke gently, close to his friend's ear. Grim's eyes were incandescent in the dim light, and Quinn knew he was deep into the bloodlust that accompanied Berserker Gang.
"You only want to feed the boy, don't you? All you want to do is feed the boy and keep him from harm. Remember? Grim. Gavrel. Listen to me. Look at me."
"I hate this, Quinn,"
Grim said later as he unbuttoned his shirt with stiff fingers. Quinn gave him a curious look.
"Do you really? What is there to hate about it? The only difference between what you did and what I would have done is that you don't know what you are doing when you're doing it. You're honorable, even when you're not fully conscious. You're so damned honorable you can't behave any other way."
"I would have killed him."
"I'm not convinced of that. I've seen you do this before, and I've seen you pull out of it. The older you get, the more control you seem to gain. And I don't know if you've realized this, but you weren't completely unaware this time. You heard me when I spoke to you. It used to take a lot longer to reach you."
Grimm's brow furrowed.
"That's true," he admitted. "It seems I managed to retain a sliver of awareness. Not much, but it's more than I used to have."
"Let me see that wound."
Quinn drew a candle near.
"And bear in mind, the meat butcher would have given no thought to beating the lad senseless and leaving him to die in the mud. The homeless children in this city are considered no better than street rats, and the general consensus is the faster they die, the better."
"It's not right, Quinn," Grim said. "Children are innocent. They haven't had a chance to be corrupted. We'd do better to take the children off somewhere else to raise them properly, with someone like Jillian to teach them fables," he added.
Quinn smiled faintly as he bent over the puckered wound.
"She will be a wonderful mother, won't she? Like Elizabeth?"
Bemused, he drew his fingers over the already closing cut in Grim's side.
"By Odin's spear, man, how quickly do you heal?"
Grim grimaced slightly.
"Very. It seems to be getting even quicker, the older I get."
Quinn dropped to the bed, shaking his head.
"What a blessing it must be. You never have to worry about infection, do you? How does one kill a berserker, anyway?"
"With great difficulty,"
Grim replied dryly.
"I've tried to drink myself to death, and that didn't work. Then I tried to labor myself to death. Failing that, I just plunged into every battle I could find, and that didn't work either. The only thing left was to try to foot..."
He broke off, embarrassed.
Well, as you can see, that didn't work either.
Quinn grinned.
No harm in trying, though, was there?
Grim begrudged a faint curve of his lip.
Get some sleep, man.
Quinn lightly punched him on the shoulder.
Everything looks better in the morning.
Well, almost everything, he added with a sheepish grin, so long as I wasn't too drunk the night before. Then sometimes the wench looks worse.
And so do I, for that matter.
Grim just shook his head and flopped back on the bed. After folding his arms behind his head, he was asleep in seconds. Chapter 11. Everything looks better in the morning. Watching Jillian from his window, Grim recalled Quinn's words and agreed wholeheartedly. What lapse of judgment had persuaded him that she wouldn't follow them? She was breathtaking, he acknowledged as he watched her hungrily, safe in the privacy of his room. Clad in a velvet cloak of amber, she was a vision of flushed cheeks and sparkling eyes. Her blonde hair tumbled over her shoulders, casting the sun back at the sky. The rain had stopped. Probably just for her, he brooded. And she stood in a puddle of sunshine that shafted over the roof from the east, proclaiming the hour to be shortly before noon. He'd slept like the dead, but he always did after succumbing to the berserker rage, no matter how brief its duration. Peering out the narrow casement window, he rubbed the glass until it permitted him an unmarred view. While Hatchard gathered her bags, Jillian linked her arm through Kaylee's and chatted animatedly. When Quinn appeared in the street below a few moments later, gallantly offered his arms to both ladies, and escorted them into the inn, Grim exhaled dismally. Ever gallant, ever golden Quinn. Grim muttered a soft curse and went to feed Occam before worrying about his own breakfast. Jillian mounted the main staircase to her room, glanced about to ascertain she was alone, and then detoured stealthily down the rear steps, smoothing the folds of her cloak. Biting her lip, she exited into the small courtyard behind the inn. He was there, just as she'd suspected, feeding Occam a handful of grain and murmuring quietly. Jillian paused, enjoying the sight of him. He was tall and magnificent, and his dark hair rippled in the breeze. His plaid was slung too low for propriety, riding his lean hips with sensual insolence. She could see a peak of his back where his shirt had obviously been hastily tucked. Her fingers itched to stroke the smooth, olive-tinted skin. When he bent to pick up a brush, the muscles in his legs rippled, and despite her vow to make no sound, she exhaled a breath of unadulterated longing. Of course, he heard her. She instantly assumed a mask of indifference and volleyed into questions to head off a potential verbal sully.
"Why don't you ever pen Occam?"
she asked brightly. Grim allowed a brief glance over his shoulder, then started brushing the horse's sleek flank.
"He was caught in a stable fire once."
"He doesn't appear to have suffered for it."
Jillian traversed the courtyard, eyeing the stallion.
"Was he injured?"
The horse was magnificent, hands taller than most, and a glossy, unmarked slate gray. Grim stopped brushing.
"You never stop with your questions, do you? And what are you doing here anyway? Couldn't you just be a good lass and wait at Caithness? No, I forgot. Jillian hates being left behind," he said mockingly.
"So, who rescued him?"
Jillian was determined not to rise to the bait. Grim returned his attention to the horse.
"I did."
There was a pause, filled only with a rasp of bristles against horseflesh. When he spoke again, he released a low rush of words.
"Have you ever heard a horse scream, Jillian? It's one of the most blood-curdling sounds I've ever heard. It cuts through you as cruelly as the sound of an innocent child's cry of pain. I think it has always been the innocence that bothers me most."
Jillian wondered when he'd heard those screams, and wanted desperately to ask, but was hesitant to pry at his wounds. She held her tongue, hoping he might continue if she stayed silent. He didn't. Silently stepping back from the stallion, he made a sharp gesture, accompanied by a clicking noise with his tongue against his teeth. Jillian watched in amazement as the stallion sank to its knees, then dropped heavily to its side with a soft nicker. Grim knelt by the horse and motioned her closer. She slipped to her knees beside Grim.
"Oh, poor sweet Occam," she whispered.
The entire underside of the horse was badly scarred. Lightly, she ran her fingers over the thick skin, and her brows puckered sympathetically.
"He was burned so badly. They said he wouldn't live," Grim told her. "They planned to put him down, so I bought him. Not only was he wounded, he was crazed for months afterwards. Can you imagine the terror of being trapped in a burning barn, penned in? Occam could run faster than the fleetest horse, could have left the blaze miles behind, but he was imprisoned in a man-made hell. I've never pinned him since."
Gillian swallowed and glanced at Grim. His expression was bitter.
"You sound as if you've been trapped in a few man-made hells yourself, Grim Roderick,"
she observed softly. His gaze mocked her.
"What would you know about man-made hells?"
"A woman lives most of her life in a man-made world,"
Gillian replied.
"First her father's world, then her husband's, finally her son's, by whose grace she continues on in one of their households, should her husband die before her. And in Scotland, the husbands always seem to die before the women in one war or another. Sometimes merely watching the hells men design for each other. That's horror enough for any woman. We feel things differently than you men do."
She impulsively laid her hand against his lips to silence him when he started to speak.
"No, don't say anything. I know you think I know little of sorrow or pain, but I've had my share. There are things you don't know about me, Grim Roderick. And don't forget the battle I watched when I was young."
Her eyes widened with disbelief when Grim lightly kissed the tips of her fingers where they lay across his lips.
"Touché, Gillian," he whispered.
He caught her hand in his and placed it gently in her lap. Gillian sat motionless when he curled his own about it protectively.
"If I were a man who believed in wishes on stars, I would wish on all of them that Gillian St. Clair may never suffer the smallest glimpse of any hell. There should only be heaven for Gillian's eyes."
Gillian remained perfectly still, masking her astonishment, exulting in the sensation of his strong, warm hand cupping hers. By the saints, she would have ridden all the way to England through the savagery of a border battle if she'd known this was waiting for her at the end of her journey. She fancied her body had taken root where she knelt. To continue being touched by him, she would willingly grow old in the small courtyard, suffering wind and rain, hail and snow without the slightest care. Mesmerized by the glimpse of hesitation in his gaze, her head tilted up. His seemed to move forward and down as if nudged by a serendipitous breeze. His lips were a breath from hers, and she waited, her heart thundering.
"Gillian! Gillian, are you out there?"
Gillian closed her eyes, willing the owner of the intruding voice to hell and farther. She felt the soft brush of Grimm's lips across hers as he quickly, lightly, delivered a kiss that was nothing like the one she'd been anticipating. She wanted his lips to bruise hers. She wanted his tongue in her mouth and his breath in her lungs. She wanted everything he had to give.
"It's Ramsay," Grim said through his teeth. "He's coming out. Get up off your knees, lass, now."
Gillian stumbled hastily to her feet and stepped back, trying desperately to see Grim's face, but his dark head had fallen forward to the spot hers had occupied a moment before.
"Grim,"
she whispered urgently. She wanted him to raise his head. She needed to see his eyes. She had to confirm that she'd truly seen desire in his eyes as he'd gazed at her.
"Lass,"
he groaned the word, his head still bowed.
"Yes,"
she whispered breathlessly. His hands fisted in the folds of his kilt, and she waited, trembling. The door clattered open and shut behind them.
"Gillian," Ramsay called as he entered the courtyard. "There you are. I'm so pleased you joined us. I thought you might like to accompany me to the fair. What's your horse doing on the ground, Roderick?"
Gillian released her breath in a hiss of frustration and kept her back to Ramsay.
"What, Grim? What?"
she entreated in an urgent whisper. He raised his head. There was a defiant glint in his blue eyes.
Quinn is in love with you, lass. I think you should know that, he said softly.
Chapter 12. Gillian deftly eluded Ramsay by telling him she needed to buy woman things, a statement that appeared to set his imagination to flight. Thus, she was able to spend the afternoon shopping with Kaylee and Hatchard. At the silversmith, she bought a new buckle for her da. From the tanner, she purchased 3 snowy lambskin rugs, thick as sin and soft as rabbit fur. At the goldsmith's, she bartered shrewdly for tiny, hammered gold stars to adorn a new gown. But all the while her mind was back in the courtyard, lingering on the dark, sensual man who'd betrayed the first glimpse of a crack in the massive walls around his heart. It had stunned her, bewildered her, and fortified her resolve. Gillian didn't doubt for a moment what she'd seen. Grim Roderick cared. Buried beneath a mound of rubble, the debris from a past she was beginning to suspect had been more brutal than she could comprehend, there was a very real, vulnerable man. She'd seen in his stark gaze that he desired her, but more significantly, that he had feelings so deep he couldn't express them, and consequently did everything in his power to deny them. That was sufficient hope for her to work with. It didn't occur to Gillian, even for a moment, to wonder if he was worth the effort. She knew he was. He had everything to offer that she'd ever wanted in a man. Gillian understood that people didn't come perfect. Sometimes they'd been so badly scarred that it took love to heal them and allow them to realize their potential. Sometimes the badly scarred ones had the greatest depth and the most to offer, because they understood the infinite value of tenderness. She would be the sun beating down upon the cloak of indifference he'd donned so many years ago, inviting him to walk without defenses. Her anticipation was so strong it made her feel shaky and weak. Desire had shimmered in Grimm's gaze when he looked at her, and whether he realized it or not, she'd seen an intense, sensual promise on his face. Now, all she had to do was figure out how to release it. She shivered, rattled by the intuitive knowledge that when Grim Roderick unleashed his passion, it would definitely be worth waiting for.
"Are you chilled, lass?"
Hatchard asked worriedly.
"Chilled?"
Gillian echoed blankly.
"You shivered."
"Oh, please, Hatchard,"
Kaylee snorted.
"That was a daydreaming shiver. Can't you tell the difference?"
Gillian glanced at Kaylee, startled. Kaylee merely smiled smugly.
"Well, it was, wasn't it, Gillian?"
"How did you know?"
"Quinn looked very handsome this morning," Kaylee said pointedly.
"So did Grim," Hatchard snapped immediately. "Didn't you think so, lass? I know you saw him by the stables."
Gillian gaped at Hatchard with a horrified expression.
"Were you spying on me?"
"Of course not," Hatchard said defensively. "I just happened to glance out my window."
"Oh,"
Gillian said in a small voice, her glance darting between her maid and man-at-arms.
"Why are you two looking at me like that?"
she demanded.
"Like what?"
Kaylee fluttered her lashes innocently. Gillian rolled her eyes, disgusted by their obvious matchmaking efforts.
"Shall we return to the inn? I promised I'd return in time to have dinner." "With Quinn?"
Kaylee said hopefully. Hatchard nudged the maid.
"With Grim."
"With Occam,"
Gillian flung over her shoulder dryly. Hatchard and Kaylee exchanged amused glances as Gillian dashed down the street, her arms overflowing with packages.
"I thought she brought us to carry," Hatchard observed with a lift of one fox-red eyebrow and a gesture of his empty hands.
Kaylee smiled.
"Remy, I suspect she could cart the world off on her shoulders and not feel an ounce. The lass is in love, for certain. My only question is, with which man?" "Which one, Gillian?"
Kaylee asked without preface as she fastened the tiny buttons at the back of Gillian's gown, a creation of lime silk that tumbled in a sensuous ripple from clever ribbons placed at the bodice.
"Which one what?"
Gillian asked nonchalantly. She ran her fingers through her hair, pulling a sleek fall of gold over her shoulder. She perched on the tiny settle before a blurry mirror in her room at the inn, itching with impatience to join the men in the dining room. Kaylee's reflection met Jillian's with a wordless rebuke. She tugged Jillian's hair back and swept it up into a knot with more enthusiasm than was necessary.
"Ouch!" Jillian scowled. "All right. I know what you meant. I just don't wish to answer it yet. Let me see how things go this evening."
Kaylee relaxed her grip and smiled.
"So, you admit to this much. You do intend to select a husband from one of them? You'll heed your father's wishes?"
"Yes, Kaylee. Oh, absolutely yes."
Jillian's eyes sparkled as she leapt to her feet.
"I suppose you could wear your hair down this evening,"
Kaylee begrudged.
"Although you should at least allow me to dress and curl it."
"I like it straight,"
Jillian replied.
"It's wavy enough of its own accord, and I don't have time to fuss." "Oh, now the lass who took over an hour to choose a dress doesn't have time to fuss,"
Kaylee teased.
"I'm already late, Kaylee,"
Jillian said with a blush as she swept from the room.
"She's late,"
Grimm said, pacing irritably. They'd been waiting for some time in the small anteroom that lay between the section of the inn that held the private rooms and the public eatery.
"By Odin's spear, why dunno we just send a tray up to her room and forego the pleasure of her company? Not a chance,"
Ramsay said.
"Stop pacing, Grimm," Quinn said with a grin. "You really need to relax a bit."
"I am perfectly relaxed,"
Grimm said, stalking back and forth.
"No, you're not," Quinn argued. "You look almost brittle. If I tapped you with my sword, you'd shatter."
"If you tapped me with your sword, I'd bloody well tap you back with mine and not with a hilt."
"There's no need to get defensive."
"I am not being defensive."
Quinn and Ramsay both leveled patronizing gazes at him.
"That's not fair," Grimm scowled. "That's a trap. If someone says, 'Don't get defensive,' what possible response can a person make except a defensive one? You're stuck with two choices, say nothing or sound defensive."
"Grimm, sometimes you think too much," Ramsay observed.
"I'm going to have a drink," Grimm seethed. "Come get me when she's ready, if that remarkable event manages to occur before the sun rises."
Ramsay shot Quinn an inquiring look.
"He wasn't quite so foul-tempered at court, de Moncrief. What's his problem? It's not me, is it? I know we had a few misunderstandings in the past, but I thought they were over and forgotten."
"If memory serves me, the scar on your face is a memento from one of those misunderstandings, isn't it?"
When Ramsay grimaced, Quinn continued.
"It's not you, Logan. It's how he's always acted around Jillian. But it seems to have gotten worse since she's grown up."
"If he thinks he's going to win her, he's wrong," Ramsay said quietly.
"He's not trying to win her, Logan. He's trying to hate her. And if you think you're going to win her, you're wrong."
Ramsay Logan made no reply, but his challenging gaze spoke volumes as he turned away and entered the crowded dining room. Quinn cast a quick look at the empty stairs, shrugged, and followed on his heels. When Jillian arrived downstairs, there was no one waiting for her.
"Fine bunch of suitors," she thought. "First they leave me, then they leave me again."
She glanced back up the stairs, plucking nervously at the neckline of her gown. Should she return for Kaylee? The Black Boot was the finest inn in Dirkesh, boasting the best food to be had in the village, yet the thought of walking into the crowded eating establishment by herself was a bit daunting. She'd never gone into a tavern eatery alone before. She moved to the door and peeked through the opening. The room was packed with boisterous clusters of patrons. Laughter swelled and broke in waves, despite the fact that half the patrons were forced to stand while eating. Suddenly, as if ordained by the gods, the people faded back to reveal a dark, sinfully handsome man standing by himself near the carved oak counter that served as a bar. Only Grimm Roderick stood with such insolent grace. As she watched, Quinn walked up to him, handed him a drink, and said something that nearly made Grimm smile. She smiled herself as he caught the expression midway through and quickly terminated any trace of amusement. When Quinn melted back into the crowd, Jillian slipped into the main room and hastened to Grimm's side. He glanced at her, and his eyes flared strangely. He nodded but said nothing. Jillian stood in silence, searching for something to say, something witty and intriguing. She was finally alone with him in an adult setting, able to engage in intimate conversation as she'd fantasized so many times. But before she could think of anything to say, he seemed to lose interest and turned away. Jillian kicked herself mentally.
"Hell's bells, Jillian," she chided herself. "Can't you dredge up a few words around this man?"
Her eyes started an adoring journey at the nape of his neck, caressed his thick black hair, wandered over the muscled back straining against the fabric of his shirt as he raised an arm for another draft of ale. She reveled in the mere sight of him, the way the muscles in his shoulders bunched as he gripped an acquaintance by the hand. Her eyes traveled lower, taking in the way his waist narrowed to tight, muscular hips and powerful legs. His legs were dusted with hair, she noted, drawing a shaky breath, studying the backs of his legs below his kilt. But where did that silky black hair begin and end? Jillian released a breath she hadn't even known she was holding. Every ounce of her body responded to his with delicious anticipation. Merely standing next to this darkly seductive man, her legs felt weak, and her tummy was filled with a shivery sensation. When Grimm leaned back, momentarily brushing against her in the crowded room, she briefly laid her cheek against his shoulder, so softly that he didn't know she'd thieved the touch. She inhaled the scent of him, and reached brazenly forward. Her hands found the blades of his shoulders, and she scratched gently with her nails, lightly scoring his skin through his shirt. A soft groan escaped his lips, and Jillian's eyes widened. She scratched gently, stunned that he said nothing. He didn't pull away from her. He didn't spin on his heel and lash out at her. Jillian held her breath, then inhaled greedily, reveling in the crisp aroma of spicy soap and man. He began to move slightly beneath her nails, like a cat having its chin scratched. Could it be he was actually enjoying her touch?
"Oh, can the gods just grant me one wish tonight, to feel the kiss of this man?"